Around the NFL Podcast. Always triple sources.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday.
And to you.
You know, classic rock fans are probably aware of this, or music fans. John Lennon's Lost Weekend. It's when he was estranged from Yoko, and I think a lot of drug use was involved. And the Weekend was kind of a big deal in his growth as a man, according to John Lennon. Rest in peace. I had a similar Lost Weekend this weekend, but nothing exciting, no heroin, no Yoko figure involved.
No growth as a man?
No growth as a man at all. I don't remember anything about the Weekend, and it's gone, and I'm just starting to accept that this is my life.
And it wasn't due to, like, pleasant, adventurous excess. I feel you on some of these weekends where suddenly it's not just Sunday night, it's Monday morning at 4:50 a.m., and, like, you can feel the week staring down at you.
You're 3 days older, and you've got nothing to show for it.
Nothing.
How was your weekend, guys?
That was good.
I was meant to hang out with Dan on St. Patrick's Day, and around 4 p.m., I texted and said it's not happening.
It wasn't happening on my end.
It wasn't happening.
It just wasn't going to happen. And that was it. And then Sunday happened yesterday. I barely remember Sunday. The Lost Weekend.
Inertia's a
I barely remember anything. It's kind of a nice way to go through life.
What's going to happen when you actually start getting old, Greg, and you know the ravages of time start to zap your mind a little bit and your memory gets I'm a little worried about that.
I think
already there.
We're there. I view it more as like a lifestyle choice. There are certain things I choose to mark as meaningful. I'll keep that. But pretty much everything else,
So you're like a memory elitist?
Maybe so. I mean, like, I was having a good time this weekend. I was enjoying it, you know, a lot of time with the kids and stuff. But, yeah, it's just gone now.
Good stuff. All right, good chat, guys, on the week. And let's talk about football now. Because a lot to talk about. We're now just hitting like the week mark since the legal tampering period began. So free agency has definitely settled down, but there are still some chips falling into place. So we're going to get caught up since the last time we spoke to you, which was or recorded for you, which was Friday morning. So we will get into it, and we'll start with big talk at the top of the draft board. Around, oh yeah, my favorite team, the New York Jets. All right, let's get into it. All right, so the big news over the weekend, it was on St. Patrick's Day that the Jets announced that they had acquired the number 3 overall pick in the draft with the Indianapolis Colts. The Jets send their 6th overall pick, the 37th overall pick, the 49th overall pick, so both their second-round picks, as well as a second-rounder in 2019 to the Colts. So the Jets move up, get into prime quarterback real estate, maybe not as high up, Mark, as they wanted to, because they I guess placed the phone call to the Cleveland Browns. They're never going to do business with the New York Giants. That is a relationship fraught with pitfalls throughout the years. So they move up to 3, box out the Bills. I'm real happy as a Jets fan. Your thoughts on this move, Mark?
I think we're seeing more and more of these trades where I guess you want to come out and say, one team A fleeced team B, and it's evident to everyone. I think this is a deal where the Jets win because according to what we're hearing from the Jets, they're comfortable with, in theory, getting the 3rd quarterback on the board or their board, that they would be okay with that. And the Colts, who I incorrectly pinged on Friday for being too inactive, they want to build through the draft, and this allows Chris Ballard to do exactly that. So you can pick a winner in this, but for me, both teams got what they needed. The Jets have needed a quarterback forever, and they have a chance to get one.
This is a fascinating trade on so many levels. They put the Bills in checkmate 6 weeks before the draft. It turns the Giants' number 2 pick into one of the most interesting pick scenarios we've ever seen, and I've never seen a trade like this where a team gives up what they gave up, nearly $2 on the dollar, according to Chase Stewart of Pro Football Reference, compared to some other trades like Goff and Wentz that were much less on the dollar. And they don't have a specific target in mind. You could trade up.
They must on some level, but
you can't. Because the other
in their
two
own
teams,
mind.
Right. You can only say that one of these 3 quarterbacks I'm fine with. or I'm okay with that. But they don't have an RG3, a Goff, or a Wentz that they're specifically trading up.
Or in theory, they love, let's say, Rosen and Mayfield. Like, those are their top two guys, and they just feel really good, and they could be wrong, that one of those two will be there at three. It makes sense. I agree with everything both of you guys said. The thing I'd be worried about is the idea that ultimately all of these moves are being made by the Jets and a general manager who I'm not confident is going to be there a year from now. And do the Jets avoid getting into the same cycle that they've been in over and over and over, where different people are drafting players for different parts of the franchise? Because will the Jets have enough patience to withstand another 3-13, 4-12 season and not change their general manager, who just spent a ton of money on mid-level free agent players and now is making all of these draft picks? And it's a lot of draft picks. I mean, it's four players for one. So you're trading four players for one, and including the number six overall pick in this draft, and three pretty high level picks. It's a virtually no risk, amazing move for the Colts, and it all works out for the Jets if they pick the right quarterback. But the trick is, it's not just about picking the right quarterback. It's providing that quarterback with enough structure from ownership to coach to general manager to the players, and having a plan to make that quarterback look good. And if they're 5-11 a year from now, if they're 5-11 a year from now and they fire all those, then it's a dumb move.
You're speaking a lot of sense, but it's one step at a time here. And I think that they have some pieces in place on a roster that's not ready for the playoffs, but I don't think it's as bad as last year. Certainly not when they had a lot of people were predicting 0-16. So I think there are some pieces there. I think that if you get the quarterback and he shows flashes ability to play and be a franchise guy, which it has to be to if you're going to trade up this high and give up this much. If you get that guy in place, then I think Maccagnan buys time. The only way it doesn't work out is if they draft a quarterback that completely bombs in year one, like Deshaun Kizer, which there was a lot of factors in that. But even he was a second rounder.
Sure.
So it's like if they can just get a guy that flashes, I think it buys Maccagnan some time. And it should, because I think he's had a good offseason after the Kirk Cousins. I think
that's tough to evaluate a rookie quarterback off of that. Look at Jared Goff in his rookie season. There are plenty of other.
But then what do you do? Not swing for it? The Jets, I think, if anything, correctly assessed that there was a possibility that if they stayed where they were at six, that not only the third quarterback wouldn't come to them, that maybe four or five could go, and then you'd be stuck
with
Mike Maccagnan. Right, you'd be stuck with Josh McCown and a wait-and-see Teddy Bridgewater. That's how you get fired. If this works, Mike Maccagnan could be there for the next 10 years.
Right, but he would also be 4 years into it. I guess the thing which is worth raising is he's struggled drafting quarterbacks so far. It's been much lower picks, but whether in Houston or New York, and he hasn't really at this point shown anything for his 3 years running the Jets.
But then you fire him before this process.
Right. I agree with that. I think they sort of have to buy into Maccagnan and Bowles again long term, which is a crazy spot, because usually you do want to see progress after two, definitely 3 years of a run, and they haven't shown it.
Relevant to the number six overall pick, since Joe Flacco was selected number 18 overall in 2008, 25 quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round. Tim Tebow is the only one from pick 6 to 32 who's won a playoff game in the past decade.
And I thought that the Bills, I don't know. I mean, I understand that the Bills were aggressive to move up to 12, but I thought they telegraphed this a little too much and gave Maccagnan, if he needed any more window, to know you need to make this move before the Bills do. And maybe the Bills do get to number 2 and then they're okay as well. But I think Maccagnan did what Buffalo didn't, which was seize the moment there, and now it leaves the Bills in a super desperate spot, because they have, like Wes said, it's harder to find a true difference maker later in the first round, and you have in the Bills, they have two first-round picks, but then A.J. McCarron, which is no one's example of a guy you want to lead the franchise, and Nate Peterman. So they are almost in a desperate spot. If I'm a Giants fan, or if I'm in the Giants organization, I'm thinking really hard what I want to do here. Do I want to stay in the pick or move? I feel the same way about the Colts, who now are in six. But if you want to see how the draft plays out and maybe spin that back with the Bills, if they have someone they like, you could really clean up off this pick. You've already done
the
it
Giants?
With the Jets. The Colts.
Oh,
trade
the
up,
Colts.
Trade back again if someone's there on the draft. I'm just saying the Colts are still in a very good
position. Ballard told Peter King that they would be open to, I mean, of course you'd be open to it. It depends what comes your way, but that's how you play the draft if you're the Colts. They want to avoid free agency, and they want to stockpile and stack one draft after the next for 3 years. That's how he wants to build Indianapolis.
That's a safer and generally how you win. Doesn't mean it always works. Certainly the Browns haven't used the picks in the Carson Wentz trade particularly well, so it all depends on again, I think the structure sort of that you have in place. Do you have an offensive philosophy that can groom a great young quarterback in New York? The Colts thing is safer. I do find it interesting that I think people around the league, and you saw it in the Peter King article, and I've heard other things, I don't know if everyone really buys the whole Giants aren't taking a quarterback thing at two. That is very much up in the air whether they're going to take
especially
that
now.
Two.
Well, why would you not trade to six if you weren't going to take a quarterback? I mean, outside of Saquon Barkley, and if you were that fascinated with him, you can get almost the best outside of the quarterback position player available at six.
Right? They're going to get Chubb, or they're going to get Barkley, or it's a top pick for the Colts. You have to surmise, I know the Jets and Giants don't do business, but it would be malpractice if Mike Maccagnan didn't make that call to the Giants. I mean, it hasn't been reported yet. It has been with the Browns, but it would be absolutely insanely going out of your way to do your job poorly if you didn't see if the Giants would take this offer.
They're not
it's a pretty
trade.
Nice offer.
They've never traded before, and they never will.
Right, but of course you would these call to see if the Giants
well,
would do it.
We don't know. Probably did, but I'm just saying.
You should be fired if they
there's
didn't.
There's a serious reason why this trade with the Giants would never happen, because the Jets and Giants don't do business together.
Dave Gettleman seems like, of the 32 GMs, the least likely one to care about what's on the back page of the New York Post or any other newspaper. But if the Jets stay at three, get the quarterback of the future, he turns out to be great, and the Giants bypass a quarterback, Eli Manning's successor, don't go quarterback, they're going to get absolutely destroyed.
And even more so because it's the Jets.
Yeah.
So that's how the Jets can stick it
I think
to the Giants.
The Giants are boxed in, I think, in that sense with the quarterback position. Because even if Gettleman and this regime likes Eli and thinks he has a couple of years left, which the jury's obviously out on that, you can't risk. What if the Giants are 4-6?
Jerry just came back, actually.
Yeah,
they've reached the verdict.
Right. What if they're 4-6 on Halloween and they didn't draft a quarterback, and Sam Rosen has 20 touchdowns for the Jets? Like
the Fox analyst Sam Rosen suddenly played for the Jets.
Josh Rosen. I think that in that situation, the Giants would get killed. And the Giants are a smart organization. I don't think they'll ever go down that road.
I mean, Edelman's played it well so far. He's got everybody thinking he could take a quarterback or Saquon Barkley. And those
the right
are the guys everybody
it.
Wants to
yeah.
trade up.
It boxed Cleveland into taking a quarterback at one or risking incredible PR fallout as well, because they can't wait till four now to see what happens.
No. Because, even if they wait.
They never could, I don't think.
I think they were going quarterback all along, but if they wanted to get cute and you found out someone else really wanted Chubb or Saquon Barkley at two or three, you could maybe wait till four for your quarterback. They don't have that luxury now because of what the Jets
do. And I think, and this is not something that's unconsidered with the Jets or in New York in general, I think since the Johnson family has taken over this franchise, is they can sell this. Like, this gets the Jets fans excited at a point at a lowest point possible in terms of buying tickets, in terms of excitement about the franchise. And it's like they had to sort of do this to reengage their fan base. I'm not saying that's a good reason to make decisions, but I think it goes into the decisions.
This also shows how one-sided the relationship is between a fan and a team.
Right.
Because as a fan, you have no choice but to give yourself over to the team. And the guys who are stewards, Mike Maccagnan, he's the steward of your fandom. He and Todd Bowles, they're charged with basically a public trust, but what they're doing is saving their jobs. Like, all of their moves are intended to save their jobs, not to reward your fandom.
I do wonder what's the difference, and there's no way to know, of Woody Johnson being in the UK. I think that probably makes a difference.
There's Chris Johnson is his brother that's in charge of things, and from the reports that you hear, Chris Johnson has been more open, more communicative with the team. It's been a better culture around there. Obviously, it's a short-term thing with Woody in the working for Trump, but we'll see how it all plays out. You brought up the fans.
One thing on this, Albert Breer reported on this, that Woody was he was on board with this decision before he left. That right. They had talked about this quarterback plan a year ago, and he was already on board with it. Do whatever you can to get a quarterback.
He knows what they've been missing for his entire tenure there.
Yeah. I mean, Maccagnan needs some hits. These are his top five paid players on the team. McCown is number one, amazingly, at only $10 million. Jermaine Johnson, good player. Kelvin Beachum, Buster Screen, and Brian Winters. I mean, those are your top five paid Jets.
Right.
So he needs to bring in big-time talent.
And he, the quarterbacks, the two quarterback whiffs, not really petty as much, but obviously Hackenberg stick with him and deservedly so. So he gets one more shot to get a quarterback and make it work. And what were you going to say, Mark?
Well, you opened the show by describing yourself as having a lost weekend that went from A to Z with no human memory. Your team in the middle of this weekend, did it not spice it up a little bit, your Saturday or Sunday, to find out that this was
happening? I woke up to that, so that was very good. And I think it's good to we haven't heard from him in a while. I wanted to see how Keith Hanzus thought about the Jets, the first week of free agency, about this trade, and I asked him, hey, why don't we report card time with Keith Hanzus? So let's see what Keith had to say.
His name is Keith. He's Dan's dad. No doubt about it, he's a big Jets fan. What is he gonna say about the game today? What is he gonna say about the game today?
I think the Jets have made a good trade to move up in their draft position. I'm hoping for Donald to be their top pick as the best scenario. But I think Rosen would be very good as well because he's a drop-back passer from pro-style offense. I'm also happy with the fact that they missed out on the Cousins deal. I think that that's the best for both Cousins and the Jets. And goodbye to both Teddy and Hack. All right. They're not going to be missed. I think also as far as the move that McCagnan has made has been pretty good. The signing of McGowan and Bridgewater, Claiborne, and Avery Williamson has also been a good pickup. So my grade so far is a B+, but they need an A+ with QB to make this a successful offseason.
You have to remember how hopeless last offseason was. So Jet fans are pumped right now, and maybe McCagnan's not the answer, Greg. I don't think any Jets fan is all the way in on him because of what happened with Hackenberg mostly. But I like what they've done this past week, and I'm really excited for the draft. So they're doing their job as an organization, at least right now. Fans have hope, and they're excited for the future.
I like how Keith delivered. He knows that you want grades to get clicks. You gotta hand out grades. That's what the customer wants, and he's doing it.
By the way, Bill's general manager Brandon Bean told Peter King he is, quote, not ready to move up in the draft for a quarterback. His quote to King: I haven't spent enough time to have an opinion about any of them yet, honestly.
Yes,
you a liar.
No.
Well, now he doesn't know where to move up to. I think that it became a lot trickier for him.
That's interesting because it's such a different. It's the inverse of the Jets' approach. The Jets traded up without a specific target in mind when they haven't had a chance to sit down and meet with any of these guys. And the Bills GM has basically said, I want as much data as possible. I want to meet with these guys. I want to know who I'm trading up for. It's the exact opposite approach.
They met with him at the combine,
I'm sure. It's line season.
For 15 minutes. Not spending a whole day with him, putting him up on the blackboard, seeing what makes him tick.
But the Jets have been scouting these quarterbacks for 2 years. And they have to feel confident with what they're going to get. I mean, organizationally, not just McCagnan,
right,
but the scouts and everyone else that have been sent out to track every one of these players' moves for 700 days.
Going back to that Burt Breer piece, plan A was actually to draft a quarterback high, assuming 2016 would be a nightmare, or 2017 would be a nightmare loss season. Then the Cousins, they went to the Cousins race. That didn't work out. So they're back to the plan A, which was plan B, or plan B, which was plan A, and they're going to be okay, I think. That's what I feel.
It shows you how costly those wins are.
Oh, brutal.
And, like, for instance, the Bills should have lost that game in the snow against the Colts. And then the Colts have another win. I don't know what the tiebreaker would have been, but they would have had the same record as the Jets. Who knows? You might have just been in the number three spot if that game. There's just so many crazy factors, and now the Colts get, you know, 4 second round picks out of it because you know Chuck Pagano decided not to get closer for an Adam Vinatieri field goal. It's just so strange.
Dan, we spoke Friday about you're saying that you like Lombardi's quote about football being the perfect team sport except for the imbalance at the quarterback is too important. And that goes hand in hand with another one of my favorite quotes from Thomas Dimitroff. When you don't have a QB, the search for one consumes you. But my new favorite to describe the value of a quarterback in the NFL was David Letterman at the Peyton Manning ceremony when he said, "This guy changed the skyline of the city." This is the goal of every NFL team, to have a quarterback in place for two decades that makes you one of the 8 or 10 franchises who are relevant to ESPN, NFL Network, and everyone else who covers football, because two-thirds of the league, here's a dirty little secret, doesn't get reported on and is irrelevant to most of the major networks, most of the media. You do not want to be on the Bills, Jets, and Browns hamster wheel of irrelevance for two decades. You want the quarterback who changes skylines, gets buildings built, make sure you sell out every game like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and changes the skyline. That's the goal, and that's what the Jets are trying to do.
Yeah, and if Peyton Manning doesn't have that one lost season due to the neck injury where the Colts conveniently out of nowhere go, 1-15,
yeah,
they get Andrew Luck, then the Colts are one of these teams that couldn't have made this deal. The only reason the Colts, we can praise Chris Ballard, and he deserves praise, but you're able to make this move because, assuming Andrew Luck doesn't have more health issues, you've got that guy, and so you can accrue draft picks and build around it.
There's so much randomness that goes into it. Tom Brady lasting until pick 199 is randomness.
We hadn't heard from Keith Hansis in a while. How about Chris Ballard? I'd like to hear from him.
What's your favorite type of frog?
Okay.
He doesn't have a lot of different things to say, but it's always interesting, his questioning. Anyway, so that's what's going on. So is it really possible, by the way, that the first five draft picks would be quarterbacks? That's not possible, right?
I think it's completely possible.
Has that ever happened?
Cleveland would have to trade out because Cleveland's got the fourth pick. So four of the top five, because you go to Denver.
Has it ever been the
five.
First three?
There have been three. I don't think there's ever been top four.
When was the last time?
Did you hit me with an absolutely there?
Oh no, I think there's been three.
There's
I
been
there
a
two.
Couple of times when there were top three.
When you hit someone with an absolutely, I want the facts.
No, I thought you asked if the top three could be quarterbacks this time, and that's what I said.
It would be
absolutely.
Wild. It's an interesting scenario. I haven't heard anyone opine. Could it be all four? You know, with the Browns and
this
Giants
is a strange year. I think
trading
it could
out.
Happen.
So it would be Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, and who would be the fifth?
Well, no fifth.
Yeah, okay. Probably not a fifth.
I think Lamar Jackson could come off at some point after that because, listen, the other player in this, if they have any way to do it, I think Miami realizes, as they should have a month ago, they're not going to get Baker Mayfield or any of these guys they like at 11. They're going to have to try to wait. You got three AFC East teams trying to get into the top five for quarterbacks.
Well, it's also such an inexact science. Bucky Brooks was talking last week. Some teams have Mason Rudolph ranked first or second or third. And I don't think it's like some crazy, like they're just out on a crazy ledge. They're like, no, we like him about third for those reasons. And so that makes me think, well, he's getting taken in the first round and maybe he's going to be a guy that Arizona and Miami looks at. I don't know if those are those teams that like him.
I wonder how many QBs go in the first round.
I mean, Baltimore's been talked about as a sneak team to grab a quarterback. They're one pick after the Cardinals, 15,
the Bills,
16.
Cardinals,
Dolphins,
in addition to all the teams we've been talking about.
Patriots, probably not in the first round, but nothing would shock me with them.
The crazy thing is because the quarterback absence is right now about five or six quarterbacks around the league, and if this will not happen, you know that two of these guys will work out, the rest will completely S the bed, and it will be an utter nightmare for three franchises. But if it ever did work out, and this was the draft that for a certain amount of time brought us to the point where we finally, in our lifetime, have 32 functioning, enjoyable starting quarterbacks.
It's impossible.
It won't happen, but
one
this,
of these guys
this
is
a bigger haul.
Smith, another one's going to be Cade McNown.
Although it could be
no doubt.
It could be 2004 with three either Hall of Fame or borderline Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
That would change a lot.
The difference is back in 2004, people weren't going as crazy, and guys like Ben Roethlisberger could slip to 11, or a team like the Chargers
or
could confidently trade down
to 4. Or 2017. When guys like Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson slipped?
That's fair.
Yep. Mark, 20.
Although I'm not ready to put them right there yet.
2021, Jets-Browns AFC title game. Sound good?
I mean, it sounds great as long as my team wins. It'd be even more painful to lose to the Jets and after
You'll
all
take
this.
A loss.
I'll take a loss.
You can say that now.
Because then I'll know the quarterback is good. That
was, last time they played in the playoffs, it was one of the longest games in NFL history. Not that, possible with 10-minute overtime.
That would guarantee doubling the combined Jets and Browns Super Bowl appearances if there was a game like that. Right? Right? Oh, Greg.
Oh, Greg. Oh, Greg. How dare you. All right, let's get into the rest of the news around the league. And we'll start with, yes, the Honey Badger. He finds work. It happened on Friday after we finished our show. The Houston Texans signed the former Cardinals defensive back, Tyrann Mathieu. The deal is for 1 year and $7 million, according to Tom Pelissero, who had the report for us. The deal was official on Monday. Wes, I am really surprised that he essentially signed for a prove-it deal. Were you?
Yeah, I think part of that's the safety market, which has been non-existent. I think he was the first big name out of all the safeties to sign. There's been no Earl Thomas trade. I think that was a big part of it. And probably teams wondering, is Tyrann Mathieu ever going to be 2015 All-Pro Tyrann Mathieu again? He wasn't quite that, even at the end of last year. But this Texans defense is very intriguing because they have so many question marks. He's one of them. Will J.J. Watt ever be the same player? Will Whitney Mercilus come back to what he was? Can their other additions really bolster a secondary that needed it last year? They seem like a fascinating defense.
If half of those answers are no, they're in big trouble. But they were not a good secondary last year.
But the upside with Clowney, Mercilus, Watt, Honey Badger, it's pretty exciting.
Two really good young inside linebackers.
Especially the pass rushers. Matthew's at a different level. I was really surprised, and this maybe is a case where we allowed, you know, a player that we really love watching play. We certainly love his personality, color how we thought his market was going to be, although I don't think we were the only ones, because that was surprising. I think his, judging by his words, his agent was expecting something better. But I did ask around a little bit about this one, and I didn't think – I guess there wasn't what you said in terms of the health, whether he's all, ever going to be all the way back physically. And I think the question with him was he has to prove that he can cover wide receivers out of the slot. I think there's some question whether he really is a cover guy, and if he's not, then what is he? He's sort of a box safety. So I think there's some question. If he can show that he can cover guys one-on-one in Houston, he might be re-signing in Houston for a lot of money.
How many free safeties cover wide receivers, though?
More now. And they get that get big contracts.
They're usually covering running backs and tight ends out of the backfield.
I mean, they can do zone. You know, he might be more of a zone guy. Either way, I think there was question, obviously, that he could get back to the level he was at, and he'll have a chance to prove it. I mean, Dontari Poe and Alshon Jeffrey are great examples of guys who settled for prove-it deals last year and ended up getting paid.
This stat from Bill Barnwell of ESPN that speaks to the statistical drop of Honey Badger. He had 5 interceptions, 11 tackles for a loss, knocked away 17 passes in 14 games before suffering that second torn ACL in 3 years. In the 26 games in 2016-17, 2 interceptions, 9 tackles for a loss, 8 pass breakups. So maybe not as productive a guy, and a team like the Texans was smart to be able to sign a guy that has a chance and a chip on his shoulder to get back to that level, or maybe he doesn't. I guess if you're the Texans, you wish you had him for more than 1 year, because if he's a monster again this year, then he hits the open water.
And you do what Jeffrey did with the Eagles. I think showed a nice blueprint of what to do with some of these high risk guys, high reward. Jeffrey and Timmy Jernigan were both brought in with 1 year deals. One was a free agent, one was a trade. And by late in the season, they were like, these are our guys. And you can get those long term deals done during the season.
Yeah, and Mathieu's gonna look at them and say, this is the team that took a shot on me. I don't know who else tried to recruit him, but J.J. Watt was a huge reason that he went there.
Moving on. Kyle Fuller. He's staying with the Bears, but another team made a play. The Green Bay Packers had signed Fuller, the cornerback, to a offer sheet. And Chicago quickly matched it. So the deal is $56 million over 4 years, $18 million in guarantees, Rap Sheet reported. Greg, can you kind of make sense of this to me? I'm just a little confused about the way they play this.
The Packers?
The Bears basically let another team negotiate for them and then immediately matched the deal. What was behind all this?
I'm a little confused, too, of the reaction to it, which has been suspiciously similar across the outlets, as if they're getting talking points from someone inside the Bears building. Ultimately, you know, the Bears can argue that, hey, the Packers kind of negotiated for us. It was tough to get a deal done. We didn't want to, you know, set his number really high by giving him the franchise tag. I still look at it like you're paying Kyle Fuller as much money in the next 2 years as almost any cornerback in football. A, that's questionable. And B, if you had been a little more aggressive to begin with, certainly if you gave him the fifth-year option, I understand the reasons they didn't do it. But I would have rather kept him on the franchise tag than do this deal, because they basically gave him a two-year, $29.5 million deal, and they had the Packers negotiate for him, but I think they could have had him for less.
If you start with the franchise tag number of $15 million, then this deal goes even higher.
Maybe. I mean, that's...
They want him there long-term. But I think that they wanted to find out what his market was. They honestly didn't know what his market would be.
And part of it is he wanted to find out maybe what his market was too, instead of just accepting a deal before going to free agency, and he found out.
It makes sense that they matched it right away. Why let a good player go away?
To me, the confusing part was, why did the Packers make it so easy to match? Did they really think the Bears weren't going to match that?
Maybe they're just getting them to pay it. I mean, why not do it? You know what? It doesn't hurt. It's like asking for a raise.
I think it's a reason you don't see the transition tag used very often at all, because the reactions by everyone are kind of just like, excuse me?
It is crazy, though. And the fifth-year option thing, I really think if you're keeping a player on your roster, give him the fifth-year option. There is so little downside. Kyle Fuller would be on their team for, I think, a third as much this season as he will wind up being. I think he's getting $21, $22 million this year now.
Speaking of prove-it deals, Sheldon Richardson has found a home. It is with the star-studded Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota announced Friday that the former Seahawks and Jets defensive lineman signed a one-year $8 million pact worth up to $11 million in incentives to join a stacked defense in Minnesota. Mark, the rich get richer, and Richardson, who's still just 27 years old, gets a chance to really reestablish his value on a great defense.
From a Vikings standpoint, it reminds me a little bit with the Seahawks up until before this offseason, where they were adding these big-name defenders to what they thought was a team still in its Super Bowl window, and keep adding strength on strength. The Vikings right now have Sheldon Richardson and Linval Joseph at tackle, and Everson Griffin and Danelle Hunter. And that is an incredible defensive line if they stay healthy. And they're basically saying, our Super Bowl window is wide open. We're going to keep adding these guys. And the one thing for all the quarterback chatter, Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman did talk about, we cannot lose what is the heart of our team, which is our defense. We have to keep these guys around for the extent of this run.
I think the NFL sent a message to Richardson, too, which is like, we don't trust you.
Yeah.
So because he is such a talented guy. I mean, I saw it as a Jets fan when he was at his peak in around 2014, 2015, before he started getting into trouble. The guy was a terror on defenses. But people don't want to give him a long-term deal because there's been too many red flags. So this is what he's got to live with. He kind of paid for that.
And if he can't succeed, it's a great position to look great. Because if you can't succeed on that defensive line and you're going to be on television, national television, pretty much every other week and a lot of primetime games, and you can be part of a quote-unquote winning culture that goes to the playoffs, and like all that stuff, I think, helps your bottom line as Malcolm Butler and Nate Solder. I mean, if he can't get it done there, he's not going
to
get it done.
How about stick to the speed limit, please, in Minnesota, on the streets of Minnesota?
It's smart.
It's why Ndamukong Suh should sign with the Rams. Just go to the Rams, play next to Aaron Donald. You'll be on TV every week, and you can go back into free agency next year. Just sign a one-year deal and wreck the league.
Can't wait for an offseason full of who has the best defensive line in football. With Michael Bennett saying things like, I think we can have the greatest defensive line in the history of the NFL.
They're pretty good,
comparing
too.
It to the Golden State Warriors. Okay. As if he learned nothing from Vince Young.
Sheldon Richardson, we were just in Minnesota, so we can give you some tips how to stay out of trouble but still have fun. I think it begins and ends with the TGI Fridays.
Lock it down at TGIFs.
Lock it down. Get a nice Coke and some jalapeno poppers.
Mm.
Have a nice night.
Great wait staff there.
Who's the waiter again that we love? What was his name?
What was his name?
Oh, damn it.
It was something unique.
I've got a
nice guy.
I've got three more words for him, just as a recommendation. Long sleeve undershirts. It's big time. Makes a big time difference.
How about Long John Underpants?
That's
it. Cold up there. Moving on, LeGarry. Speaking of cold locations, he signs with the Detroit Lions.
I like that everybody knows him as LeGarry. Yeah. Just one word, LeGarry.
The former Eagles running back, the former Patriots running back. He is on a two-season Super Bowl championship streak, and now he goes to a team that's never even went to the Super Bowl.
That will end.
But anyway, Blunt reunites with Matt Patricia, who, of course, was with New England for the last several years. But, Greg Rosenthal, there's a lot of buzz percolating that the Lions are going to add someone else to go with LeGarry as soon as the draft.
Well, that shows there's not a lot of faith in Amir Abdullah, who's there. I was interested.
He got a lot of run, didn't he? Abdullah had his chance to prove himself, right?
And the regime still likes him. I don't know where this buzz is coming from about the draft, because everything they've said is Amir Abdullah is still in our plans.
I was really intrigued by Blunt saying he had a really strong bond with Matt Patricia. Anytime I ever saw him, I'm quoting him now, any part of the building, whatever the circumstances, it was always laughs and jokes. We got really close. It would get serious. I just like this idea of that Matt Patricia is sort of this man about town that like everyone loves. And
it was just
Belichick kind of constraining him publicly, and now we're learning that he's the life of the party.
Well, I think we act like the offense and defense in these buildings never, you know, fraternize or see each other. These guys are in locked down in the building 24 hours a day.
Well, some teams, you remember Collision Lacrossers, it showed how separated those two worlds can be. But maybe Matty Patricia is just one of those exceptions that everybody, you know, he lights up a room, Matty.
This is a position they've needed for a long time, a power back in Detroit. But I'm a little interested to see how it works out, because these backfields where they have the power guy and the passing down guy often don't work out, because there's so much of a tell about who's coming into the game, what you're going to do. The Saints have guys like Ingram and Kamara who can do both. One of them's a passing down guy who runs well, and the other's a running down guy who catches well. Blunt is one of the least effective receiving backs in the NFL, and Theo Riddick is one of the least effective running backs in the NFL. So it's a tell. And that's why they have to keep Amir Abdullah, because he can do both.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, the trade tsunami strikes once more. Oh, my goodness.
Or even on land. It's not even safe there.
Well, yeah. Yeah, the nature of the tsunami is that it's attacking the land from the sea. But obviously, being if you're looking to just, you know, hang out in the water,
go to the sixth floor of your local tall building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Patriots acquired kick returner slash wide receiver Cordarrelle Patterson, as well as a sixth-round pick in this year's draft from the Oakland Raiders in exchange for a fifth-round pick this season. And, Greg, this is a move for the Pats that obviously they had a hole after Deion Lewis left for Tennessee in their kick return game. I would need to be convinced that Cordarrelle Patterson is going to be a part of their offense, but who knows?
No, I don't think he will. I mean, just looking at Edelman, Hogan, Cooks, Malcolm Mitchell, Kenny Britt in theory, I mean, he's at best fifth or sixth. But I like that the Patriots put such an extreme value on special teams. It's kind of part of their secret sauce that they invest more in special teams than just about any team in the league, and it shows up every year. They're always one of the top six or seven special
teams. They're going to lose your boy Matthew Slater, it looks like.
I thought the timing was interesting, because Cordarrelle isn't just a returner, he's also a gunner. He's really good at punt coverage.
There's a pretty strong argument to be made he's the best special teams player in the NFL.
So why did the Raiders give up?
Because they thought he's a terrible wide receiver, and he is, apparently. And I think that was what they were focused on.
John Gruden determined to go 5-11 also.
That could be it.
1998 football.
In other Raiders news, Beast Mode is going to be sticking around, it looks like, because he will get that $1 million roster bonus. According to Rap Sheet, he's scheduled to make about $6 million in 2018. So Marshawn Lynch and Doug Martin, Mark Sessler, will be the two lead guys, it looks like. Do you like that pairing?
I mean, they've got a deep roster, because DeAndre Washington, you got Jalen Richard as well. I was not huge on Marshawn Lynch last year. I thought he played better than I thought he would. I think it depends completely which Doug Martin you get. I'm kind of surprised they're keeping Lynch. Greg, I believe you had a sandwich on this.
Gonna
that he
lose
would be
him.
Gone.
Gonna lose
and I don't know if I took you up on that. Maybe I did for the game itself. But
we'll
I thought you'd
be
right.
We'll check in on the sandwiches on Friday.
I mean, it's an interesting move. I don't know if I'd want Lynch as my starting guy in 2018.
Boom or bust is the way I would look at their backfield.
If I'm a fan of another AFC West team, I like everything I'm hearing coming out of Oakland so far.
I agree.
You think Beast Mode? He was one of the best running backs in the league in the last.
To me,
eight
John,
he was solid last
to me,
year.
John
but he's a role
Gruden
player.
Is building a Jeff Fisher team, so that I would love for an AFC. If I'm a Chargers fan, I'm thrilled with this.
You're a Chiefs fan watching the Chiefs reload, have a whole different type of quarterback, and you're looking at the Raiders and saying, interesting.
I'm watching the way Andy Reid runs that offense, going up against a 1998 philosophy with John Gruden, and I'm happy with Andy Reid.
Mm. I'm also seeing the Broncos going this way, down.
They are.
The Chargers are always going to be the Chargers. I know everybody gets excited. They'll win 7 to 9 games probably. I think there's definitely a path for the Raiders to be fighting in that AFC West for
that's the Chargers division to lose.
Mm.
They have the best roster in that division.
Here we go again.
And
I'll
put my money down on them again.
I'll do it again too.
I believe in talent over randomness.
If you just stick with the same teams year after year, then you end up being right.
Like, the Eagles,
like
you
I
got
was
it.
With the Eagles,
they finally came around for you. And another Patriots moves, they signed Adrian Claiborne, 2-year, $12 million. So he gives them another guy on the edge. They also signed a running back. This is going to work out for them.
Oh, yeah.
It's annoying. Jeremy Hill.
It's like Corey Dillon all over again.
Who once upon a time was one of the young power backs in the league everybody was excited about. And ever since that fumble in the playoff game against the Steelers, it seemed like his career went in the tank the last 2 years. And now he gets a chance at redemption in Bill Belichick's offense.
That Cincinnati to New England running back pipeline. You've got Rex Burkhead, Corey Dillon. Now you got Jeremy Hill.
What have the Bengals gotten out of that pipeline? Anything going
Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis.
They got Ben Tate. Brandon Tate.
I don't think,
what a run,
I don't think
Tate.
The Bengals know like how like pipelines should work properly. It's supposed to be both ways things should be coming in a positive way.
It used to be the sewage just floated down from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati on the Ohio River, and the Bengals would sign everyone cut by the Steelers.
This is the part of free agency. Lewis Riddick, for what it's worth, kind of a Belichick disciple, put it out on Twitter today that like this is the key part of free agency. This is when the best signings happen. I don't know if that's... That might be overstating a little bit, but we do get caught up.
Does make you sound smart?
We do get caught up in like really reacting after a couple days, and now the Patriots and many other teams are gonna keep filling in their rosters. And it's like at this point, what have the Patriots really lost? Nate Solder to me is a huge loss, and you have to figure out how to fix that. And they'll probably re-sign one of their guys like Adrian Waddle, but that's not necessarily a total solution. But after that, it's like, all right, you're filling in your roster with some guys, and you can totally see them making Hill work and Claiborne at least providing pretty cheap, solid defensive end snaps like he did a year ago. And it's like, okay.
I'm always interested in who, especially on offense for me, who they decide to zero in on that other teams did not see. Now, Jeremy Hill, I think he kind of just ran, the team ran out of patience with him. But this is the team that turned Rex Burkhead into a 10 times better player than he was. Chris Hogan with the Bills. I mean, they are playing these teams.
Didn't work
scouting
out for Mike
them.
Gillisley.
Okay, but that's because they have five other running backs that work. But yeah.
No, your point is well taken.
I mean, Chris Hogan, come on, Bill.
No, those names you just brought up, I was just thinking about that. The last 3 years now in the offseason, the Patriots have made a second tier pickup that everybody was like, oh, that's going to work. Hogan, Burkhead. Although Burkhead wasn't like a home run last year, but
Burkhead
he was a good fit for them.
He helped. He helped.
He
talk
was
about an offense
until
you can't.
He blew his knee.
He helped.
Right, and you can't tell what running backs are going to do and who's in there. Burkhead's perfect for that.
Yeah.
In other news, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are having a nice little couple weeks. I think Vinny Curry agrees to a 3-year, $23 million deal with the Bucs. He was released by the Eagles, but the pipeline told us that the pipeline could be a lot of different things. We were told via the pipeline that was not for performance reasons. The Eagles just had salary cap issues, so Curry had to go. The Bucks paid like they wanted a guy that, or they believe this was a guy that could make a real impact. You like this move, Wes?
I do. I kind of like what the Bucks are doing so far. Curry, I think, is an upgrade on a declining, aging Robert Ayers, and they desperately needed. I thought offensive line was their biggest need. Secondary probably too, but Ryan Jensen helps them put Ali Marpet back at guard. Still have an issue at left tackle, but I think Jameis Winston is going to be running out of excuses soon.
I'd be wary of almost any offensive line signing this offseason because history tells us half of them are going to be busts. I mean, these are a lot of guys. I kind of put them as a group in a worst contracts of free agency column. And Ryan Jensen, who played 16 games at center in his life, was a backup for 5 seasons basically in Baltimore, is now the highest paid center in the league. Justin Pugh and Weston.
By the way, he had a vigorous market. A lot of people
loved him. Yeah. He had a great year, but I'm just saying a guy that the Ravens literally never trusted to be a starter, including last season until injuries started, and he played great. Maybe it'll work out. None of us really know. Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, both coming off serious injury concerns, got paid full price. Your guy Hubbard on Cleveland. It's like, if you needed an offensive lineman, you just had to pay them like stars.
Not my guy. I would say that, I mean, Peter King's
Monday
morning. Why do
you order
that Chris
Hubbard jersey?
Well, you're right, because I order all the jerseys because they cost about $180 each, and I'm just flush with cash. But, like, the Jensen got as many calls as Kirk Cousins from the according to his agent early on. So, the one thing about the Bucks, if they get good, I need you, if we're going to have additional games, you must change the uniforms immediately. I cannot watch an extra 1, 2, or 3 games of
hideous
the Bucks
uniform.
In these outfits.
I think there's some type of amount of time they must stick with the
uniform. No, it's 5 years, and that's 5 years too many with these outfits.
So you just have to stick it out. Stick it out, guys. Hang in there. By the way, nice use there of vigorous market. Usually, vigorous lover. Mm. It's one of those words that connects with another one.
I feel like I've heard Damashek say that about himself.
Yes, he calls himself a vigorous lover, I believe.
Waiting for a second or a third source on that.
on check?
He's acting as his own source. That's one way to do it.
He's a bias source.
He is prolific.
Orlando Scandrick spent 9 seasons with the Dallas Cowboys. He stays in the NFC East and lands a 2-year deal worth up to $10 million with the Washington Football Club, Mark Sessler.
Excuse me?
Well, you wrote the post. Throwing it to you.
I guess they needed cornerbacks. Breland goes to market. Kendall went to market. I mean, he'll step in and play the slot, but he's not young. And
what's going on with Breland? What's going on with Rashad Breland?
Another failed physical scenario.
Yeah, the failed physical.
Cut his foot in Dominican Republic?
Oh, right. Did that happen after our last podcast?
I think it happened.
No, the details came out after we did.
Right.
I feel like someone's going to get a deal for that guy. Let's see. How bad is the cut? Well, I need more details.
It required more than a Band-Aid.
That's heartbreaking luck. I don't know Rashad Breland, but to think that like you might have one big payday and you're in your entire life. I mean, in terms of just like it's all focused on this one time, and he cuts his foot.
Well, also, barring it being a giant cut, why wouldn't the team say we know this cut's going to be fine? Like four weeks from now, 3 weeks from now.
Counterpoint, Greg. Yeah, wear a pair of shoes.
Oh, maybe it's the thing in the he's not the most intelligent vacationer.
You think he was wearing those gloves for your feet?
I'm saying if I was about to make like $30 million, whatever his contract was. I don't like to go anywhere anyway, but put me in the bubble, man.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Give me a bottle of Tito's and give me
Take the vacation after.
The season should end, and you should just stay in one room.
Until you
and
get paid.
The kids aren't even allowed in there.
Any party.
Dan's philosophy. I'll vacation outside the United States when I'm dead.
And finally in the news, speaking of soon to be dead, Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers' star running back, tweeted this out to his followers on Saturday. Should I get a pet alligator or should I get piranhas? Which would be more lit?
Oi.
Mark, we'll start with you. Let's give him honest advice here.
I would go piranhas because for me, it's a dangerous animal. I don't know about more lit. Give me a break. But like you can keep it kind of caged.
No judgment zone. We're just trying to help Lev.
I'd go piranhas because it's a flashy, attractive item when you have like people over to the house. They can stand around and look at the fish tank. Alligator, you got to keep track of where that
and
thing
maybe
is.
You weren't comfortable with the slang, but you're hitting at exactly what he's asking. What would be more
I think that would be
more
that,
flashy,
that
more
would be,
exciting.
That's what
cool.
I'm saying. People come over and look at piranhas in like an awesome fish tank. I think that's a sort of a Jimmy Johnson type thing.
I'd be interested to dive deeper into the connection between professional athletes and aggressive pets. Because it takes an aggressiveness sometimes to excel in a sport like football. But like you see so many athletes, like if you're getting a dog, they're getting a Rottweiler or a pit bull. Mm-hmm. Like you don't see him ever getting a poodle.
Smells like a long form. I don't know if our features editor, Ali Bonpuri, still listens to the show, but I think this has a Wes long form written.
I mean, Ali's welcome to write it.
It's time, Wes. And the first reply, by the way, to this tweet is from some dude named Isaiah. Bro, please don't get eight. We need you. And then Cole Wright, our own Cole Wright.
Did he mean eaten?
Eight. He just said eight, man.
Like the number eight or ATE?
He spelled it ATE.
Oh, okay.
And Cole Wright chimes in, alligator man.
So Cole decisive.
Had a take. Cole had a take.
Cool. Big on the alligator.
You know what ever happened to cats? That'd be pretty lit. Just get a cat. Safer.
No, attempted that this past season. Did not go well.
Cat's not lit, though.
Far from lit.
No. I would say piranhas to be safe. You know, what is the upside of having an alligator?
Piranhas to be safe.
I just think an alligator.
There's no upside to either one of them. They're terrible.
Piranhas, upside to piranhas, I think. If you got a cool house.
Right. And if you have a badass tank, like in your foyer.
Yeah, one piranha.
These men have foyers.
Great talking point. Whoever walks in your home, alligator, it's like, oh, suddenly it's not in its like little cage by someone's bed. Where is it? We're screwed. Your whole day
and then
looking
at
this thing.
It's a talking point. Yeah, you walk in. Whoa, are these piranhas? And then he's like, yeah, man, like I was connected with piranhas because there's a pack and they attack and they're fearsome. And then it's like, oh, I get this guy. If you got an alligator that you have to hide it in like a back shed in your garage or
now
your
it's three
backyard.
Times bigger and it just ate your lit cat.
No.
Cats aren't lit. All right. That's it for today's show. We will be back. Little housekeeping. We are going to the owners' meetings. We're flying out on Friday. So how about that? And we're going to do two shows. From Orlando, we're going to talk with some general managers and some head coaches.
Oh, don't bury the lead. We are buying the Carolina Panthers, the four of us. It's happening.
Right out
from under, that's why we're going.
Feet.
We couldn't even afford season tickets to the Carolina Panthers.
So that will be coming up next week. We will have, I guess, one more show this week. We won't have a show Friday because we'll be traveling. So we'll be back on Wednesday. But until then.
One quick note.
Yes.
Congrats to our friend from the fantasy circle, no longer with the company, but Matt Franciscovich.
The franchise.
Got married over the weekend to a young lady named Mackenzie Reynolds, assuming he knew her previous to the weekend.
I like that you gave her name. Mackenzie Reynolds.
Research.
Congratulations on your marriage to Matt Franciscovich.
Franchise.
The franchise. A very good guy. All right. That's it. Stan Hansen is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, old money bags, both times behind the glass. Until Wednesday.